We're talking about how to reduce child poverty in America. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The National Academy of Sciences recently published this exhaustive 600-page report on child poverty, a couple years in the making. The report estimates that child poverty costs us $800 billion to $1.1 trillion every year due to increased crime, due to bad health, lower earnings when poor kids become adults. Are you a parent or a guardian living at or below the poverty line? What obstacles do you face when it comes to providing for your child? Join in at 800-642-1234. Economist Tim Smeeting is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the UW La Follette School of Public Affairs. Tim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, you were part of this committee that worked very hard for a couple years on a report which was mandated by Congress in 2015. What was Congress looking for in this report?
Congress was bothered, as we all should be, by the incredibly high levels of child poverty in our country. About 10 million children, 13% of kids are poor, even after we've counted SNAP and refundable tax credits and all the other benefits we have. And that's just too high. We are way out on the high end of league tables across nations. Other nations like Canada and Britain have managed to have their child poverty rates. Why can't we do something about child poverty? And if so, what should we do and how should we go about it? And that was the charge to our committee.
How many people were on this committee about?
About 15 of us. It wasn't just economists like me. It included developmental psychologists and sociologists and people in the world of public policy, a wide range of people, all of whom had worked with and written a lot about poor children and the burdens the parents carry and the troubles that kids run into.
What do the numbers look like here in Wisconsin when it comes to child poverty?
In Wisconsin, according to the Wisconsin Poverty Report, which I and colleagues do every year, I've been on the show about that before, we have about 11% of children are poor in our state, and it's very uneven. There are some small pockets in Madison and a little bit in Sun Prairie, but the big problem is Milwaukee and particularly black kids living in the most segregated city in America, where the Democratic Party is about to come and shine light. And there'll be a lot of other light, too, light that's not quite so flattering as to the plight of African-American kids in our largest city.
So this is not just a rural and urban divide in terms of a child's well-being.
Absolutely. There are poor kids in rural areas, of course. They're scattered around. But major urban areas where there's a high degree of segregation, a high degree of parental incarceration, a high degree of violence, you're far away from jobs. Incomes and families are very unstable. Kids face trauma every day. My friend Bruce Western, who will be here later this year to give the Lampman Address, has asked a simple question to people. Have you ever seen a child? Have you ever seen a person murdered or shot? Most people, oh, of course not. Well, this happens once a month, if not more often, in these neighborhoods. That traumatizes kids. And it's so hard, and when you face all these burdens and all these instabilities, you know, to get up and go to school and become healthy and productive. And so we need to do something about that.
How does seeing what these kids see on a daily basis impact that transition from childhood poverty into adulthood?
Well, it's difficult if you don't have good role models. Your parents, somebody may be strung out on opioids. There's not a lot of steady work. As one of my former students, Matt Desmond, wrote, you're much more likely to be evicted. As another former colleague, Diva Pager, wrote, on the mark of a criminal record, that if you're an African-American man in Milwaukee, you're less likely to be called back for a job than a white man who's been in prison. And this all builds and comes together in ways that, you know, just do not support kids. And there are a lot of good nonprofits and other organizations here and elsewhere trying to provide food, clothing, shelter, housing, safety and for kids. But the environment in which they do it is not good. So our goal was to provide some macro support so that it makes it easier for people who are trying to help kids to do more. And the real problem is, of course, the most uninsurable risk in a person's life is choosing their parents. And a lot of poor kids ended up with parents who mean well and want to do well, but just can't do it. So they need our help.
Talking with Tim Smeeting, he's an economist, the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the UW La Follette School of Public Affairs, and co-authored a report published in the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine report called A Roadmap to Reducing Child Poverty. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a parent living at or below poverty? What programs or resources have been the most life-saving for you and your family? Perhaps it's food stamps or free and reduced lunch. Maybe it's tax credits. Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Joseph now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Joseph. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling regarding the poverty I had to deal with pretty much all my life. Hello?
Yeah, Joseph, I'm understanding you were homeless for 3.5 years.
Yes, I was.
And what does your life look like today?
Well, it looks a little better, kind of getting back up on my feet. I used to do construction before I got homeless, before I became homeless. So I'm back into construction, doing ins and out odd jobs, you know, with construction.
How is your daughter doing?
She's doing okay. You know, I'm the guardian over her. She kind of was disappointed in me, I believe, when I became homeless. Not by choice, but circumstances caused me to be homeless.
How do you think that we could help make her life better? What type of resources would help?
I don't know. But I don't know. I think that's a tough question to ask.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your situation. Tim, when you hear that and working to get by, working just to keep up, you know, when your committee talks about that, what approach do they take?
Well, we looked at the various things we think are important. We definitely think that work supports are important. Childcare for parents who are caring for a kid. Better earned income tax credit because wages are low. They're not high enough to support your family or work as spotty as Joseph was suggesting. But we needed to put that with some sort of basic income support. So if there are months when your parents are laid off or somebody goes to jail, you don't have to lose the apartment. You don't have to become homeless. And so we had a package that provided some basic income support too, in addition to work supports. And these two together will provide a floor under the incomes of really needy people with children, and also provide some reward for them to go back to work. We also, of course, wanted to raise the minimum wage, which is still $7-something here in Wisconsin, and it should be $10 or $11.
Well, when you say basic income support, what do you mean by that?
Something that you can rely on every month. So the other countries which we compared ourselves to have something they call a child allowance. That's something that a parent gets just as a right of citizenship every month, a debit card. And in some countries, it's a lot of money. In Canada, it's $400 a child a month now. We have no such thing in our country. But if we took the child tax credit that we get for our children and extended it down, that would be $167 a month that every parent would get in a debit card every month. So there never would be a month when you had nothing. There would be something there, always something to help stabilize the lower end and to help a family get by. When you put that with your earned income tax credit and a child care tax credit so you could afford to put your kids in child care, that package would really, in our opinion, help a lot of people and would end up having child poverty within 10 years.
How does the minimum wage here in Wisconsin impact the picture of child poverty?
The minimum wage in Wisconsin is at the federal minimum level of $7.65 an hour. If we've looked at the Institute of Research on Poverty, we've looked at wages at the bottom of the distribution for people who are in child care and elder care, people who are in retail and fast food and so forth. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, those wages fell through March of 2017, May of 2017, which is the last time we saw this data. There'll be more out later this month. So can you afford childcare, transportation, and other work-related expenses to work for $8 or $9 an hour? We think that's ridiculous, and people think so in 30 other states. So we went and we did good estimates. We found that if you raise the minimum wage over 3 years to 10 and a quarter, actually nationwide, that for every job that was lost, and there will be some jobs lost, don't kid yourself, 19 other people will get a raise. And in the states which have instituted changes in their minimum wages, you see the biggest gains in recent times of wages at the bottom. So people will go to work if you make it a little more worth their while, if you make it easier, if you support their children, they can know their children are in a safe place. And hopefully that will avoid homelessness and some of the other problems like the ones Joseph mentioned.
We're talking about an expansive report from a committee of child poverty researchers. It lays out a couple different approaches, different scenarios that could cut child poverty in half over the decade. Tim Smeeding is our guide. He's a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison. You can join in at any point from any perspective in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you are technically living above the poverty line, but still have a hard time giving your children what you think they need to get ahead due to the cost of health care, due to the cost of child care, a quality education. You can call in at 800-642-1234, tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this conversation in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about child poverty here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than 10 million children live below the federal poverty line. We're at the lowest child poverty rate in decades, but researchers and lawmakers, they want to bring the number down further. And now the National Academies of Sciences has published an extensive report called A Roadmap to Reducing Child Poverty. It offers policy changes that they claim could cut child poverty in half in just 10 years. And so we're looking at those policy ideas with you at 800-642-1234. Are you a parent or a guardian living at or below the poverty line? What obstacles do you face when it comes to providing for your child? Call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. UW-Madison poverty scholar Tim Smeeding stays with us. He's a professor of public affairs and economics. Let's go to the phone now with Tim joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Anytime I hear these subjects, I've got to wonder if some of this isn't leadership. And by that, I mean, I lived in Kansas City 25 years ago, similar size city, demographics, everything. We had a black mayor there. I've lived in this back in this area for 25 years. We still haven't had that's got to be part of the picture. It's, you know, I don't get why we haven't had a black mayor and politicians that seem to handle this in Milwaukee, and that confounds me too. I suspect that plays into part of it. I don't know why that would be.
Well, Tim, let's pause there. How do our leaders affect our outcomes?
Well, thanks, Tim, for the question. Leaders are incredibly important, and we just haven't had the leadership to do this in Milwaukee. We've had a Democratic mayor for 4 terms, I believe. He sits there smiling behind the head of the Democratic National Party last week on inviting the Democrats to visit Milwaukee. But it's just not a priority. The problem is you'd have to make child poverty a priority. You have to make segregation a priority, you have to make violence a priority, and you have to find creative and holistic ways to deal with it.
Well, let's look for a moment at Governor Scott Walker, who had signed into law this rule imposing work requirements on parents who receive food stamps. Do we have any evidence as to what kind of impact this has had on children from families at or below poverty?
That's a very good question, Kate. In fact, our committee looked at workfare. We recommended against it. we find no evidence that workfare has positively affected the lives of mothers and children, and it might do as much harm as it does good. That's not the way to go. We're very explicit about that in our report. But in October, we are going to force single parents to work 30 hours a week, 4 weeks a month and longer, in order to keep benefits, keep their SNAP benefits. And this, and even worse, our former governor vetoed any legislation to evaluate how this program that he's instituted will work. Now, this is in the hands of the Evers administration, and they're going to have to deal with it. And hopefully it can be dealt with, but this just isn't the way to do it.
So when the committee looked at how best to solve child poverty, it found that no single program, no single solution or policy would be a slam dunk. But it did find that a $3,000 per child per year allowance policy would make the biggest impact. How would that work, and what other policy solutions would cut child poverty in half in a decade?
Well, even right now, we have a child tax credit of $2,000 per child per year. That goes to everybody with incomes from $15,000 to $400,000 a year, thanks to the Tax Cuts and Job Act of 2017. We would increase that. But even if you increased it to $3,000, which is $250 a child a month, that wouldn't have child poverty by itself. And we don't want it to have child poverty by itself. What we would do is we would take this child tax credit, whatever the level, we would convert it into a child allowance, and the Social Security Administration would pay it out every month the same way they help your grandmother and your grandfather, disabled people and survivors. They know how to deliver a check. They have systems for making sure that the money is being used correctly, and this would provide the base. But that isn't enough. We don't want to just, you know, give people tons of money so that they get out of poverty. We want them to be able to be self-sufficient. So we put in a lot of work supports too, including a higher minimum wage, including a stronger earned income tax credit, and including a child care tax credit. Now, when we put these things in place, then low-income people will want to work more, will try to work more. As long as they've got the work supports that they need, they work. Most poor parents work, and most parents on SNAP already work. The idea that shoving them out into any-time jobs without the proper work supports with a minimum wage less than $8 an hour is just not going to solve the problem. That's not just my opinion, the opinion of the entire committee, including a number of good conservatives.
So the cost of these different policy combinations that the committee came up with would add up to billions of dollars, $90 billion to $110 billion a year. That's a lot of money. How would the benefits offset the costs?
Well, for the full package that got us to have child poverty, the costs are about $90 to $110 billion. But you remember before that the costs of child poverty itself were 9 to 11 times as high. So the benefit-cost ratio works in our favor. It's worth it. But we have to make that investment. We have to say this is worth it. Now, if we increase the refundable child credit the way that Bennett and Brown have introduced legislation in the Senate and a number of other backers, including Tammy Baldwin, that would raise the credit that we got for our children to $3,000 each, and that makes it much cheaper to go down to give it to everybody else. The issue now is if you want to go above $2,000 per kid, we feel that we have to give it to all children. It's a universal thing. Every kid gets it. So that means that we're going to be subsidizing a lot of middle-income kids who may need it, but also some pretty well-to-do kids too. But that was our philosophy. This is a universal benefit. It's a floor. Everyone gets it, and we should have it. And every one of these other countries that we compared ourselves to has it.
So you and this committee worked very closely together. You just mentioned that there were some Republicans on that committee as well, and Democrats. Were there ever disagreements as to how you figure out how to deal with child poverty?
Oh, absolutely. People spoke up. You know, one committee member said, you know, yeah, if we want to get rid of poor kids, we can just give them money. But we don't want to just give them money. We want to give their parents some sort of a floor so that they would not be poor. And in fact, we also wanted to have what we call deep poverty, which is measured at half the current poverty line. We have 3 million kids in this country who are in deep poverty. This would take that down to around a million, these packages we're talking about, so that there's at least some floor. But then we want parents to become self-sufficient too. A market work is a widely held value in our country. It gives you respect. It makes you feel good as a parent. And as my colleague Sarah Halpern-Meekin in her book on the Earned Income Tax Credit wrote, it's not like I'm poor. I earn this money. And that's what we want for all parents. We want them to be able to help support their children, but to give them a little help if their earned income isn't enough. And the way to do that is to make their lives better by working, not to shove them out the door without a sale and say, good luck.
Okay, so there's this huge roadmap of, you know, hundreds of pages in this report. Where does it go from here?
Pardon me?
Where does this report go from here?
From here, we presented it to Congress. There are people in Congress who are interested. We're publicizing it in a lot of places. If you go to the Institute for Research on Poverty, you can see a half-hour presentation I did on this report. It's on YouTube. I was introduced by the chancellor. I work with people at Kids Forward, with WISCAP, with Wisconsin Council of Churches, with River Food Pantry, with Second Harvest, with United Way. They're all interested in how we could work together to reduce child poverty because we think it's important. We think we need to do that. Countries are judged by the way they treat their children, and we have to do better.
Well, Tim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Tim Smeeting is an economist. He is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the UW La Follette School of Public Affairs. And he co-chaired this report published in the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. And the report is called A Roadmap to Reducing Child Poverty. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show. This is The Ideas Network.